So there are some bits of scripture that really stick in my craw. Not necessarily because of what they say, though there are plenty like that, to be honest. Phyllis Trible, theologian and writer, calls them texts of terror. But it's actually, more often than not, it's the way that bits of scripture have been used. And today's gospel reading has at its close one of those. The poor you always have with you, but you do not always have me. It's even worse in some other translations. The poor you will always have with you. It's been used constantly to spiritualize and disembody the gospel, to create a separate salvation gospel and social gospel by accepting the inevitability of poverty and focusing solely on Jesus. I've heard it said that implicit in this verse is Jesus saying that the work of evangelism and conversion is more important than addressing poverty. In fact, that the work of the church is entirely spiritual, and any thoughts of social justice work or advocacy are not the role of the Christian community. Rubbish. You have no idea how much work it took to restrain that phrase there. I was very tempted to go back to the original Greek, but I'm going to mention that later. So in our Lent book, Embracing Justice by Isabel Hamley, we've been reminded again and again that justice involves judgment. And I believe that Jesus here is actually making a judgment, not just on Judas's negative statement, but on the fact of the poor are always with you. Almost, I believe, coming with the question, how can you let this be the case? Or why is it only now that the poor get a mention? In this passage, we have yet another upending of expectations that Jesus constantly has placed upon him. Perhaps Judas expected good question, Jude. We all need to keep our priorities straight here. Tut, tut, Mary, what a waste. Instead, Mary's generous and costly devotion is praised, and Judas is shown to be a long way from the abundant, generous way of the divine. In our musings at Sermon Circle this past Wednesday, we considered these passages for today, and there was, by the end of that hour and a half or so, material for at least a half dozen sermons. But one thought keeps circling back to me, and that's the way in which Judas inserts himself into this intimate moment, this moment of connection, this moment of costly and generous love. And that, more than the author's comment about Judas stealing money from the common purse, that idea of Judas inserting himself offers a little more understanding for me of Jesus' strong reaction. In pouring out this perfume and showing such devotion to Jesus, Mary is exhibiting an understanding of abundance that many of us lack. She recognizes that costly gestures of love are sometimes more transformative than pragmatism, that generous giving is life-giving for the recipient and for the giver. Mary's perfume is symbolic of her love. It is abundant. It is generous. It is giving. Into this, Judas injects a voice of scarcity. There isn't enough. Generosity is wasteful. Jesus' judgment is on this voice, the voice that fabricates the myth that there is not enough, the voice that needs poverty to shore up its own standing and influence, the voice that wants to dominate even in the face of generosity, in the face of awe and of wonder and of reverence and transcendence, the voice that distracts, demanding our attention, turning us away from seeing the Christ who is right before us. Jesus is not encouraging us in any way to neglect or ignore the poor and needy. Jesus is not resigned to a world where the poor continue in their poverty as an inevitable consequence of just the way the world is. Jesus' voice here is not a tone of resignation, but of calling us back to a different starting point, calling us back to a different way of imagining the world, a different way of justice. In this vision and this imagination, there is room for the extravagant pouring out of love. There is a sense of the abundance that comes from within and is the starting point of all that we do. This imagination is Christ-focused, Christ-facing, and Christ-finding. It seeks Christ in all whom it meets and learns to recognize that all are indeed made in the image of God, however blurred and marred that image may seem to be. Paul seems to get this, that all is eclipsed by knowing Christ and seeing Christ and sharing the life and love of Christ. Paul seems to get in today's reading from the letter to the Philippians that without that sense of abundant, generous life, we are impoverished no matter how wealthy we may be, no matter what qualifications we may have, no matter what our status through birth, or privilege through skin culture or culture, or skin color or culture, all is rubbish. Though in the original Greek, skubalon is significantly more expressive than our genteel translation rubbish would suggest. Do a Google. Paul also recognizes his need to keep capturing that imagination, to press on to a new way of being, to work for that which will transform the world. Walter Brueggemann, theologian, writer, and teacher, talks of this imagination as the prophetic imagination, and it recurs again and again in our Lent book. The imagination we need to break free from the bonds, the mental bonds of empire, from our theology of scarcity, from the paucity of our restricted vision of faith, the imagination we need to bring justice, founded on love. Our society, our world is struggling with where do we go from here? Our misuse and destruction of the created world and the climate emergency we face, the structures and systems and policies and attitudes which continue to exclude and to oppress people based on their color, culture, trauma, poverty, race, mental health, illness, gender identity, sexuality, or whatever else we choose to use to divide or to identify the other. Then there's the growing disparity and the divide between the wealthy and the impoverished. A world still caught in pandemic, though in many places it does seem the world is putting its fingers in its ears and saying, la, 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 I can't hear the next wave coming. And then there's the violence and the displacement of millions of people, not just in Ukraine, but throughout the world. All of this seems too big, too much. Are we lacking the imagination to tell a new story? Lacking the imagination to move into transformation, renewal, recreation of our world? We seem to live in an unending cycle of consumerism and complicity in the systems that provide us comfort at the expense of so many. We lack, or we ignore sometimes, the prophetic voices that call for justice and a new way of being. We seem to have lost the capacity to imagine. We do not hear the call, as we heard today in Isaiah. Do not remember the former things or consider the things of old. I am about to do a new thing. Do you not perceive it? It seems we don't. Writer, speaker, thinker, and activist George Monbiot tells us that we have not yet created a story to replace our capitalist empire-based mindset, which is so perniciously expressed and focused on the death-dealing system of neoliberalism. And as a secular prophet, Monbiot calls us to a new story, one in which all are valued, and that we see abundance and flourishing rather than exclusion and scarcity. Our scriptures repeatedly call us back to a new imagination, one in which this abundance is shown in all creation and lived out by God's people. We're being called to live as those who do believe, as John reminded us a few weeks ago, the quote from Martin Luther King Jr., "The arc of the moral universe is long, but it inclines towards justice." The poor that are always with us are we who are impoverished by our lack of imagination, by our lack of vision, by our lack of commitment to a new way of thinking and being and doing. We, perhaps, are being anointed for our own burial, either through atrophy, or perhaps, if we take the opportunity, by discerning that which must die in our hearts, our attitudes, our structures, our society, our minds, all the things that must die in order that new birth, resurrection life, justice, and love may flourish. I invite us all to this task of discerning a new future, a new heart, a new story, as a community of faith and justice and affirmation and welcome, a spiritual community listening to the prophets, listening for the whispers and roars of the Spirit, who calls us to be transformed in order that we may be partners in transforming a world, so that the poor will not always be with us. The abundance of creation will again be apparent, and the justice for which our hearts yearn might be realized. Thanks be to God.